Welcome to 1001, an album odyssey. Each week, four friends bring you five albums from the book, 1001 albums you've got to hear before you die. Each weekday, we're kind of sent an album. We all get the same one, but it's random. We don't choose them, and then we talk about them. So here we are. This week, we've got Paul Simon's Graceland, Heaven 17 by Pavement, Penthouse and Pavement. No, sorry. The band is Heaven 17. The album is Penthouse and Pavement. Man. I know. I'm sorry. It's early. Elvis Costello's Armed Forces, Dinosaur Jr., You're Living All Over Me, and the Cocteau Twins, Heaven or Las Vegas. It's hard to tell sometimes, you know? I get those two confused all the time. Am I in heaven or am I in Las Vegas? Let's get into it. Ryan, you're leading things off.
All right, so Graceland. So this is Paul Simon's effort after a couple of failed solo albums after breaking up with Garfunkel. And this album, basically the record companies and everything weren't paying much attention to him because he basically was starting to fail, and he was in the middle of, having those failures, plus falling out with Garfunkel, plus falling out with his new wife, Carrie Fisher, at the time.
And Princess Leia.
Princess Leia from Star Wars fame. And so, on paper, it looked like he was living everybody's dream, but he was falling apart. So he decided to do what a lot of people were doing at the time. Peter Gabriel and the Talking Heads were kind of going through the African rhythm feel, and he went down to South Africa and got some guys together down there and recorded in Johannesburg a bunch of tracks on analog. What he found as he was recording these tracks is that African music is a lot more bass-centric, or, you know, the instrument bass-centric, rather than guitar, which kind of appealed to him. And I read an interesting quote that Graceland is closer to Kanye West than it is any folk music, which I thought was an interesting thing. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that he decided to make it very bass and vocal driven, which is a very South African thing. So first track is just emphasizing just the bass parts that he put all over this thing. He had amazing bass players all over it, and just had some really kind of cool rhythms and bass parts everywhere. That song also has the Princess Leia callback lyric in it. Oh, this is actually just the lyrics that I love. There were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. Along with that great bass line, this album has a lot of that kind of stuff, and he's got really interesting lyrics too, which seems to be a theme for me right now. I love all the different lyrical takes on just stuff around him. I guess it's the Graceland song that I was thinking about with the lyric for Carrie Fisher.
You know that bass? Right about that bass line though, man. Right. So funky. She
said, that's love is like a window in your heart. Everybody sees you're blown apart. Everybody sees the wind blown. I'm going to Graceland.
Well, and those are some really nice vocal parts, and that kind of has a really cool, you know, feel, a texture to it, you know, that I like a lot. And I remember very distinctly. So this was my first concert, I was an 8-year-old kid in third grade. Very distinctly remember Paul Simon being super short, especially on a stage full of African singers, because it was like they brought 20 people on the stage doing crazy vocal stuff. It was amazing. It was really, really cool. It was a great show to get introduced to, especially the Universal Amphitheater, because the sound there is amazing, and we were 20 rows back or something along those lines.
Who'd you go with?
My dad. My dad took me, and it was funny because my dad and my mom were supposed to go for like an anniversary or something. They had a little falling out, and my dad took me, which I scored big time. And my mom always says that she was really happy that that happened.
So your dad didn't score that night?
Probably not, but I did. So that was a really cool experience.
You mean musically, right?
Yeah. Controversial. Clearly.
He was eight.
Yeah.
I have to report, though.
And it was funny because I do remember going back to the kindergarten playground and saying I saw Paul Simon, and everyone looked at me like I was from Mars. And I was tired, too, because we had to drive back. Totally. It was like a Wednesday night or something. Mm. But
Universal Amphitheater, what a venue.
Yep. And
that's a couple of great shows there.
And that was, that, you know, clear hearing, you know. So I remember just the sound. I have been chasing that sound all my life. Thing
you're never
close,
getting that 8-year-old hearing back.
No, and the only thing that came close to that was the Radiohead show at the Gorge, as far as sound. But I and listen to the, you know, listening to Graceland, the recording was interesting. So what they did, they went down to South Africa and they recorded a bunch of singers and stuff in these layers on analog tape in a recording studio. It was basically an old converted garage kind of thing. And Paul Simon said he was afraid he was going to go down there. It was all going to be junk. He was really surprised. It was all very usable equipment and really good recording, really, really good musicians. He paid all the musicians $200 an hour, which even scale in New York is like, you know, 50 or something down there. They you know, he couldn't figure out a way to convince them because they didn't know who he was to give him points. He did give production points and that kind of thing. But so he was paying these musicians a crazy amount of money. They were just scoring. But it was in the middle of apartheid. So they had to worry about curfew. And like they would get sketched out when it started to get nighttime and that kind of deal. And it did. It created a lot of controversy because he basically, you know, was in the middle of the apartheid, kind of, you know, using African
musicians
and stuff.
And there was a UN boycott
South
African cultural, you know, whatever, just basically to, you know, anti-apartheid boycott.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was in the thick of all that. But he managed to take all those analog tapes back to New York and started to build out the album, and he was kind of left to his own devices. And his producer that he's had, or you know, the person that did all the mixing and everything, he's had forever, and they were in the cutting bleeding edge of some of the tech at the time, and they'd use it on the previous album, this thing called a synclaver or synclaver or something along those lines, a keyboard that also was kind of a, it's a sampler. It allows you to kind of a very rudimentary sound processing machine or sequencer kind of deal that allowed you to work with real sound bites and stuff. Really expensive. It's similar to the Fairlight. So Paul Simon was doing the synclaver thing, and he took all the analog recordings from South Africa and then transformed them all to digital. So this is a digital album, which is very, like, one of the very first kind of in that realm. And he said there's no way they could have put this together analog. So this is kind of a cool album because it's got so many new tech things. And Paul Simon and Peter Gabriel playing with the same stuff, but Peter Gabriel is playing with the Fairchild or a Fairline or whatever that other synthesizer. There's two competing synthesizers that were really high-tech sampler-based ones, and that they kind of came up at the same time.
One became VHS?
Exactly. Well, neither of them did. They were both wildly expensive. They were computer-based. They built all the sound cards and everything. They were like $30,000 at the time kind of deal. They're very low quantity runs, but that basically propelled the music industry into what it is today, with everyone having a computer. The stuff they were figuring out ended up being in all these things. And that's what's really kind of cool about it. So this is an early part of that tech. So the album ended up winning the Grammy for the year, and it beat out So from Peter Gabriel, and I find that awesome. So anyways, some of the other tracks, I love all the different textures of that song, and the end of this song is really cool too. The Under African Skies, he did with Linda Ronstadt, which also got him in a lot of hot water because she did a concert down there at the time, apparently.
So I remember it was like this anti-apartheid coalition going after them.
Yep. Yeah. Well, there was a list of these people that were an assassination list by this radical group that was part of that whole apartheid deal. And for a while, Paul Simon was top on the assassination list. They actually ended up throwing a grenade into the promoter's office under the concert when they were doing that.
So,
he was kind of pushing some boundaries with some of this, which is interesting too. And then this one, all the vocal stuff. I love that kind of deal because it has all the different African rhythms, and it was an introduction to that type of sound, and to see it live was insane. It was really, really cool, and a lot of the percussion too. Charlie, I love the lyrics here. Sloped into the room. He said, I have no opinion about this.
And I have no opinion about that. Yeah, you're right, Ryan. The bass heavy, the percussion heavy.
Yep.
It's really, really a unique sound. I think the problem that I've always had with it, or with the mainstream albums, and I've never listened to the album, you know, song, all the way through, basically, but until now, but the problem that I've have usually is the music is unbelievable. I mean, musically, it's just unparalleled. It's his vocals. I really struggle to get through the talk singing, you know?
Right.
It's fine for a minute, but I don't know. There's something about it just rubs me wrong.
You know, if you give it a few listens, it feels like the early parts of, I think that's the comment with Kanye West, that whole thing, that it's kind of got the flavor of, he was the playing with hip hop too, almost. And maybe that was the trend, but he did it well. But he was experimenting because he did all the vocal stuff with Garfunkel, and it's like his rebellion against that kind of thing. Interesting fact about Simon and Garfunkel, they recorded under a single mic because they could never get the mix right. So they were better at mixing with each other on a single mic, which I think that's fascinating. Okay, so let me see if I can find a good cut point here. So anyways, that's Graceland. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Ryan. I 5 stars on the bass for sure, especially that solo you played. Not many people know that they reversed it. They played backwards to get that sound. And 5 stars on the cultural appropriation for sure.
Isn't that a bad thing?
No, I mean, it's very good use of it in this particular case, you know, especially during Homeless, where it's like Paul Simon's just chiming in every once in a while.
Maybe we could call it influence.
The true superstars are
rather than appropriation.
African singers. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big appropriation type of person. I think that you can definitely be influenced by other cultures and have that influence your music. I think that's great. But yeah, I mean, some people are really upset about this. And then, you know, it made a lot of money. So, you know, $200 an hour might seem like a good amount unless you sell $16 million worth of records. Anyway.
$60 million. It was more than that. But, I mean, that's a thing. He did try that, but they didn't know who he was.
Yeah. All that to say, 4 stars.
Well, very good. Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. Appreciate that. Well, not sure if my last comments will be edited out or not, so I'll just repeat what I've previously said, which is, I like the album. I've never listened to it.
Oh, you did already say all this, didn't you?
I did, but I'm not.
Did
who
you
knows
rate what's... it?
No, I did
you didn't. Not. Just let him, yeah, just say it again.
Why I'll just not? Say it again, just in case.
Sounds good. That'll make it easier on
me. And if it didn't get edited out, well, now you'll hear it twice, which is just fine. And that is, I've never listened to the album cover to cover until now. And my opinion remains much the same, which is I love the music. Like, musically, you just can't compare. It's unparalleled. And love what they're doing instrumentally. Love the percussion aspects. Love the bass line forward funkiness of it. Didn't realize that fun fact, Mike. Appreciate
I'm sensing
sharing that.
A butt coming.
No, more of a however.
Oh, however. Oh, okay.
Big difference.
It's a big difference, yeah. But
yeah, it's the. Smack it's his however. Style. It's his singing. Oh, talking, yeah. singing style oh, yeah. that just, it's not bad, right? I mean, obviously it's not bad. It's just, it's hard for me to listen to repeatedly. That just sounds so similar. And I just have a hard time with that sometimes. So for me, I'm going to give it a solid 3 stars.
Oh man, 3. That's harsh.
I said solid.
Paul Simon even commented on that, like, yeah, I do it that way because I can't sing. Now, we all know that that's not true.
He can sing.
He definitely can sing.
I don't
but
think he wanted to.
I agree to. That it's overly wordy and it gets annoying after a while.
But the sometimes words are it great, works. Though. The yeah. words are, like, true. The lyrics are, like,
sometimes.
It's so funny.
Yeah. Beer belly. Yeah. I don't know. He should have been more creative.
Back the alley with the bat face girl, you know?
It's funny. Yeah, I mean, that's funny. And it works sometimes. But yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Jake, because I didn't fit that into my criticism.
What about you, Jordan?
Yes, well, Jake, you know, of course, you are right that there's a huge difference between but and however. You know, but being a coordinating conjunction and however being a conjunctive adverb.
That's not the only thing with
right.
that.
Right. So, you. But anyway, aside from that, Ryan, you converted me on this album. I got to tell you this because I remember as a kid when that video came out with Chevy Chase in it from Call Me Out.
Oh, yeah.
I remember hearing it, and I'd like the horns and stuff, and I just was like, what the heck? All these people like this. What is wrong with people? And I was like, it's old people. They all like this crap. And the funny thing is...
An 8-year-old.
Yeah, an 8-year-old Ryan. But you also mentioned So by Peter Gabriel, right? And the song Sledgehammer, I had the same reaction to. I actually felt sick when I would hear those songs. When I hear Call Me Al and Sledgehammer, it gave me like this visceral reaction where I just felt ill. And I was just like...
worst songs on the albums.
And I was just like, what is... But yeah, I love both of those albums. I have both of them on vinyl, by the way. But anyway, yeah, I just felt like ill, like sick to my stomach when I'd hear it. And I was like, what is wrong with old people? Just like walk away with this headache. But then you were telling me, you know, many years ago about how you had seen this concert, heard
over
the story
and over
a few
again.
Times. Yeah. And, you know, telling me particularly how good, like, Diamond on the Soles of Her Shoes and all these other tracks are. And I was just like, all right. And so I didn't even really come around to it until, I don't know, like 7-8 years ago. I was on a road trip with So On, and we didn't have any music. So we were at this shop, and I picked up a CD copy, and we popped it in, and we listened to it quite a few times. And I was like, all right, this is pretty good. And then eventually bought it on record. Which brings me around to the point that going from probably 0 stars, thanks to your influence, Ryan, I'm gonna go 4.5.
Wow.
Ooh.
Dang.
That's a big turnaround.
You're also a lot older now than you were then.
I think it's I'm now in that demographic. So, I'm like in that age group that was making it popular
exactly.
at the time, like all those yep. old hippies who were just like, oh, he's back.
So there is a chance for Sting to be great.
Those Fields of Gold. Yeah, I've had those New Year's, you know.
I'm going to entirely give it a 5 for me, but that has to do with time and place and all those type of things. So, you know, it's a reminder of a really good moment in my childhood. So,
yes. Another great
good story.
Another great first concert story. Yep. We're on a roll. Who's going to be next on that one? Well, if we're ready, boys, let's move on to the album Penthouse and Pavement by Heaven 17. Jake.
Yeah. Heaven 17. Let's jump right in.
We don't need this fascist crew thing. Brothers, sisters, we don't need that fascist crew thing.
Yes. Thank you, Nash. I was going to say, before we jump into the music and the album, as I like to do, I want to talk about the cover art for a second. I don't expect anybody to have this up and looking at it as I am, but you know, it's interesting because it really drew me in. It's cartoon sort of drawings of looking like musicians in the business world.
Like Mad Men almost.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, just it made me feel like it's a satire, right? Of sort of poking fun at the cross between business and music. And you can even see in the background, you have, you know, everyone's wearing a business suit. And in fact, I had read that the band would oftentimes dress, you know, business-like in suits while they were performing, just trying to draw some additional attention to the fact that they were really trying to sort of fight the man with a lot of what they were doing. And you can see in the cover,
subversive
in the background.
Suits. Then subversive suits.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, I won't speak when you're talking. It really throws you off.
No, I just... it doesn't take much, man, to derail me. Yes. So what did you say?
Subversive
suits. Yes.
That was meant to just be a little aside, but okay.
Well, yeah. No. Well, I appreciate the commentary. Sorry. You could tell the dude in the background has the little drum machine going. The dude in the front and the foreground has his keyboards. I mean, it's just really pretty cool. One guy on the phone, not sure what he's doing.
Pink phone.
There's that guy.
Well, and he's definitely, well, and there's a recording machine in the back too.
He's the A&R cool. guy. He's like, you know, making the
it's
calls,
a, it's
getting
a
it played
cool
on the radio.
Cover. And thank you for that, Jake.
A new partnership. Cool.
And you see the little mullet kind of ponytail things going on?
Yeah.
That's, you know, business in the front, party in the back.
There you go. Uh-huh. Yep. Another
cocaine again.
Another nice aside to what they're trying to do here. So, Penthouse and Pavement, you know, pretty cool title too. And again, really sort of drawing that juxtaposition from luxury versus the working class struggle, and that title, the title of the album, highlights that, as well as the title track, which we've just heard. The band itself, Heaven 17, formed off of a spinoff project from their original band, The Human League. I don't know a whole lot about the Human League, but yeah. I understand Jordan does.
Well, not a ton, but it wasn't exactly. I mean, they actually just split up because they had some pretty big disagreements about the direction of the music. And so I guess they decided to leave, and Phil Oakley, the singer, remained in Human League and turned it, because he had a more of a pop oriented bent on the, you know, for what he wanted for the music. And that worked out pretty well for them with all their hits. And then Heaven 17, they were kind of more interested in being experimental, and they, because Human League had been a very experimental band prior to the split, and the sound difference is huge after these guys left. But so they kind of went with more of the experimental stuff.
What was that Hugh? I know when we were on pause for for a second, you mentioned that one of their more notable songs from the Human League. What was that?
Well, aside from Don't You Want Me, there was Fascination and Mirror Man, and then Human. Those are like some of the biggest hits that they had.
Yeah.
Well, Phil Oakley went on to start that sunglasses company too.
Are you just making a joke?
Oakley? You never heard of him?
Yeah. I thought that was Charles Oakley, the basketball player.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
You can't just make shit up, man.
Well, you can. But you'll get checked.
That's how you engage your audience.
You get them pissed off.
Like, wait a minute. That's not where that came from.
You engage them by them turning off the show.
It was.
Well, I mean, so what? We go down to 999,000 listeners. We can afford it.
True.
Fuck
true.
Those people.
Currency of listeners. That's great.
Well, let's talk about this split concept that I just mentioned, this juxtaposition. So you have the Penthouse with this polished corporate pop, and the Pavement portion, which is gritty, socially aware tracks. I think that's pretty cool. And that would take us into the first track on the album, which we just heard, We Don't Need This Fascist Groove Thang. which it notably was banned by the BBC for anti-fascist, anti-Reagan, and anti-Thatcher sentiment. So,
how dare they?
It was banned for anti-fascist?
I thought that was kind of cool with the BBC to be anti-fascist.
You would think.
You'd think.
Huh? Well, it did get them. Did
maybe because it had that fascist band. Reference. Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, and then you get into more, of course, the title track, Penthouse and Pavement, a funky parody of corporate culture.
That's probably a Stingray bass or something along those lines. That sounds so
awesome. What I was going to say.
So funky.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I wasn't a giant fan of the album in the first place, but, you know, you get into some of that sort of, you know, the musicianship of what they're doing, and yeah, that funky bass really gets you hooked.
Dude, and that song goes on for like over 6 minutes.
It's a long one. Yeah, and then of course, one of the other that I like on the album, Let's All Make a Bomb. Of course, a satirical look at the. You know, everyone's nuclear fear, probably. I don't understand. Take the M out of MAD. They really get after that lyric in the song, like 400
mutually
times.
Assured destruction. That was part of the whole concept of making too many nuclear weapons.
You take the MAD out of the MAD, right? The craziness.
Yeah, exactly. Or take the M, the mutual, maybe. I don't know.
Wait, what was it? Was it the M or the MAD? What was it?
I don't know what the lyrics were.
It was take the M out of MAD.
But mutual.
let's take the mutual out. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll just fuck them up.
Just assured destruction. Mm-hmm. It's not mutual. It's crazy how much effort was put into that, and it turns out the Soviets were just really good at faking it.
Yeah.
We were the ones that made all the bombs.
Well, they had enough to destroy us, though, too.
Everyone could screw everyone up.
Still a pretty big stockpile after the collapse.
But it was like 1 to 10 or something. It was insane.
They could only blow us up 5 times.
Yeah, right. The world would end 6 times over instead of 12 or whatever. Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of that, speaking of the world ending, it sort of takes me into this next track, which is really, I thought, one of the cooler tracks on the album, and probably because it's all instrumental. There's no vocals, so you really kind of get a deeper understanding of what the band's going through with Decline of the West.
It's kind of got a Brian Eno feel.
Dark.
That is dark. It's heavy. It's all
metal. Moog?
I like it.
I mean, I don't know. It's not, you know, that's not something you want to listen to on repeat, I don't think.
It's good for 15 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
You're depressed.
So anyway, yeah, some behind the scenes from the recording of the album. This was all done in-house. This was the band doing this in their studio, the BEF studio in Sheffield. So did a lot of this themselves.
Better eat fudge.
Well, and it's on the album cover, the BEF thing.
Oh, yeah, cool. It does say that.
I still don't really understand the BEF portion.
If you look at every pair of Oakleys, it's engraved on one of the triggers.
That's true. It's an Easter egg.
That's awesome.
The new partnership that's opening doors all over the world.
So what's your rating?
So, well, I'd like to get you some fun facts, if that's okay. And then we'll jump right into the rating.
It better be fun.
So far,
let's talk about...
How does it feel, Jake?
It doesn't feel so fun on this end. Yeah. But I can appreciate it, but yes. So, fun facts or facts. The band name. Did you know where the band name comes from?
I'd like to know.
Well, let me
somebody
share.
Somebody told me.
A Clockwork Orange.
Oh.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that, Jake?
Yeah, I have never seen it, never read it.
I swear you're a Nazi.
Yeah, it might be.
No, they were talking about you during fascist group things.
So Jake does in the shower every morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next homework fun assignment. Fact. Yeah.
That was the fun fact.
That was it.
That was it.
Okay.
I thought you said with an S. I distinctly heard the S, facts. Like it was plural. Yeah. There might be more.
Well, that BEF was the first one. So.
As I review, I can see some of these may not be as fun as I had originally thought.
Oh, you're self-editing.
Oh, this is so gotcha. On the fly. That's why you stopped. Okay.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now I have to know what they are. Come on. Well, you got to tell us.
Okay. All right. Did you know?
Can you say them with more enthusiasm? This is like,
well, did you know that?
Jesus, yeah, the this band is like used a to
dress like a businessman.
I had heard that. I had heard that before. Yeah.
You dressed that one.
Crazy. So, cross that off the list.
Let's move on to the ratings.
What is your rating?
Check.
I think now's a good time to get right into the ratings. I'm going to give this one a 1 star.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Really, not a solid 1 star. Brian, dang. What about
actually,
you, Brian?
I enjoyed it enough. I think I gave it 3. I like the keyboard stuff, and the music was good. I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. I liked the cover a lot. I think that got at least a 0.5 star.
I gave it 3 as well. I thought half of the songs were really, really good, and the other half I was just like, meh.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And Jordan?
The day I was listening to this, it just wasn't in the mood. And you know, like a can of spray paint, and you rattle it around, there's that little metal ball inside it? I felt like that was dinging around in my head as we were playing.
Wow. Great.
Yeah.
Every time I shake a can of paint now, I'm going to think of Penthouse and Pavement.
Yeah, so that's how it felt to me that day. But hearing the clips, and I generally like that genre of music. I don't know why it hit me so hard, but... Yeah, I think because a lot of the songs were overly long, like my dialogue here. So I'm going to go with 3.
Wasn't that long, comparatively.
Editing.
Yeah, I've been way longer than that.
Great. Next up, Elvis Costello and the Attractions bring you Armed Forces. 1979. Did you know what Elvis Costello's real name is? It's not Elvis Costello.
It's, wait. What is it?
Declan Patrick McManus.
Yeah.
Okay. Born in London, 1954. But he got that name from his dad. That was his dad's stage name.
It wasn't Carl Abbott, right?
I don't think so.
Oh.
But his dad was a jazz musician. And then, you know, and then he got Elvis for just, I don't know, just pulled it from some dude.
Yeah.
Elvis Costello.
It's great.
Anyway,
name.
He was just plugging away. I mean, he was just handing out demo tapes until finally somebody gave him a shot. Made his big breakthrough with Allison.
Really?
So then went on to, I mean, that's a great song.
Yeah.
This album, a little less punky. He was kind of known as an early punk influencer.
But it was still pretty soft because it was a lot of acoustic-y.
Yeah. And then so this one was a little more poppy. But yeah, him and 3 other musicians. That was like his go-to band, The Attractions, for a long time. And they were just solid guys, right? Keyboard, bass, and drumming.
Cool cover art, too, with the elephants.
Yeah, cool. Jordan had a fun fact about the U.S. version of that album,
It has just a totally different cover, kind of like abstract expressionist 80s style splatter paint, you know. And it also had the very first barcode on any record. That was the first one.
Now that's a fun fact.
So for record collectors, it's a little bit of a milestone because you can kind of know when records were pressed based off of that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. What do they call that? Marker, whatever, the high point, a watermark.
We call it AD.
Oh. Anyway.
When did this album come out?
1979. So the interesting tie-in to the last album is this working title of this album was Emotional Fascism, and there are some fascist overtones. That starts the album. You can get a sense of his vocal style, which is pretty unique, but, you know, strong vocals too. So yeah, but then, you know, you got to you can hear a little bit of the keyboard virtuoso here in Oliver's Army. I mean, come on.
That's
ABBA,
good.
ABBA. And that one gets stuck in my head, too, when I'm having, like, I talked about that Courtney Love song getting stuck in my head. This one is always, like, if I'm having a rough day, it's like, man, I'd rather be anywhere else but here today.
That's cool.
But, yeah, I mean, just great. Like, and there's a couple really big hits off this one, too. But the other clip that I picked was, I think, I don't know, play whatever I picked next. I don't
Green mess Shirts. It up.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
And she turns them into black and white.
I really like this song.
I mean, yeah, just that organ. Yeah.
You shine all the buttons on your green shirt. You can please yourself.
That'd be fun to cover.
Yeah, just really cool stuff. I mean, some of the other songs on there were kind of annoying to me and kind of grating. I went to an early Elvis Costello concert. Well, not early. This was in like 95 at the Irvine Meadows, which it's called something different now. But yeah, Crash Test Dummies opened for him, and I thought it was a good concert. But then afterwards, me and my friend Jackson were walking to the car, and we saw this guy, and it was like, there's Elvis Costello right there walking out to his car too. And so we followed this person like to their car, thinking for some reason that this was Elvis Costello walking out to the general admission parking with some random chick after his concert. And we scared those people, and I got in the car, and then like the girl's like, it's not him. You fucking idiots. Like,
don't dress up like him.
I don't know if there was marijuana involved.
I have a feeling. I was going to ask you about that.
That's, if I know you and I know Jackson, that definitely was a Jackson idea.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
That was not there he is. Yeah. There he is right there. Like, what are the chances?
And it's not good enough to be like, oh, that's cool, and then keep going. No, you got to chase him down like psychos.
Spoiler alert, it wasn't him.
He didn't sign your boobs?
No, we scared those poor people. Anyway, I just thought that was a fun story.
You know, they're probably telling that same story right now.
I'm sure, right? And these idiots thought that it was actually Elvis Costello. It did look very much like him, just to our credit. But
were there probably about like 1,800 people who looked exactly like Elvis Costello at their concert?
Probably. I mean, all you need is those thick glasses and, you know, a well-dressed person. But anyway, I gave it 3 out of 4. Jordan, what about you?
For this one, I'm going to go 3.5. I like it. It's not his strongest effort, to be perfectly honest with you, but, you know, it's pretty solid. It's, you know, for all the reasons you've mentioned.
Nice. Moving on. Jake?
Yeah, I also gave this one 3. I enjoyed it. I usually really enjoy Elvis Costello. I don't listen to them a ton, or, you know, it's not in my usual mix of songs, but yeah, I like this one.
Yeah, and on fun fact, he's still touring, but I don't know if I would recommend seeing him. He's gotten a little bit older and a little sloppy. Ryan?
Well, I gave this a 4. I love Elvis Costello. I love the music a lot, and I think this is a pretty good album, and I really liked Green Shirt. That was one I've never heard. I thought it was really cool. There was one track that you didn't play, so I just wanted to play it.
Oh, thank you.
Another really good song. And it's cool that they end the album with that, but yeah, I think 4 stars is definitely where that's at. And yeah, it's good music.
Thank you. And now for something completely different. Dinosaur Jr.
You're living all over me.
Thank you, Jordan.
All right, let's go ahead and start us off with Little Fury Things.
First 15 seconds.
Okay. First 15 seconds.
Oh, well, come on.
Yeah, I chose this because it kind of sets the tone instantly.
Yeah.
So wow. Right off the bat, you know, you just get that like real intense just opening, and it gives you that sort of chaotic noise mixed with the melodic elements that were kind of mixed throughout this. And this album, you know, was a really huge influence on, you know, acts that came later, like in the 90s, all the grunge and alternative stuff, a lot of the lo-fi indie. And, you know, so it was just very, you know, impactful, especially for that blend of the, like the distortion and the just noise with kind of hints of melody and things like that. So that's the, you know, and then the explosiveness that you got with grunge. So yeah, the opening seconds of that album just hit really hard with that distortion, that propulsive drum beat, you know. It reminded me a little bit of Danger Zone. Did anyone pick that up? Is that just me? I don't know. That beat, there was something about it.
I'll have to give it a re-listen.
I might have to go back to that and listen again.
No one's going
to
get that because that episode was never released.
Well, that'll be bonus for our
But we know they're just going to think I'm weird, and that's true enough.
Right. They're not wrong.
Yeah. So, yeah. So the album's very, you know, like, kind of tuneful and abrasive, and you know, I just love that screaming that kicks in and kind of going back to their hardcore roots. But they went from that hardcore like punk route to kind of crafting actual songs, which I thought was nice. And you know, so another thing about this is kind of the jagged guitar riff and the distortion. He started using pedals and things like that to create his distortion, which was kind of very, very much against the punk ethos at the time. And so like, it was kind of like, you know, basically going the mortal sin, but he was introducing these kind of different elements, bringing that back in, you know, and which I thought was kind of interesting to kind of, cause it was getting too rigid. I don't know. I'm not really into that punk hardcore sound. Any of you?
Nah.
No, it got really boring and just like dry and one dimensional. And so I think you had to shake things up, and this type of album kind of did. And it sort of brought things out and kind of, I think, opened new potentials. And that's why they were so influential in bands like the Pixies and Nirvana and even Pearl Jam and Mudhoney and, you know, all these things that came after that. And you hear a lot of like Pavement with that kind of chaotic sound. And then it kind of, wait, there's a bit of a melody in there, you know? So that's, yeah, this, when I first listened to the album, I wasn't, you know, quite convinced, but I listened to it a couple more times and it was just, it kind of hooked me. So it definitely grew on me. It wasn't something I loved right out the bat, but I was very interested in it too, because in, you know, Jay Mascis is a good songwriter, but in addition to that, it featured Lou Barlow on this album, who went on to form Sebado after he got kicked out of this band. Yeah. And Sebado was always one of my favorites in the 90s, especially the album Bake Sale and Harmacy, you know, so you can hear a little bit of that in here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and moving on, let's go to our next track, The Lung.
I wonder what he did to get that signature like drawl that he has.
It sounds bitch. I love his voice.
Yeah, I like his voice too. And because it's one of those things that's not everyone's going to love it. But for me, I think it works. And it kind of has that there. And that's another thing too about this. They were actually singing, you know, even though it's not like what you would consider traditional type of singing. But compared to other like music of that genre and with the you know, the tradition they came out of, that was actually singing, you know. And also the guitar riffs there too, I thought was kind of cool, because you can really kind of hear a lot of that grunge sound. And Jay Mascis, the singer guitarist, he was kind of known for within this genre of being a bit of a shredder, you know, because he actually played like solos and things like that, which also hadn't really, people weren't really doing that sort of thing. And again, that was kind of something you were going to see more in the 90s coming up. So yeah, so the critics were kind of they pointed out the fact that it had like this warm kind of distorted sound with a, you know, like a expressiveness that was kind of unique at the time. And yeah, so let's move on. Let's go to Raisins. I don't know how, if that's how you say it. It's like a misspelling of raisins.
Apparently the live shows were really, really loud.
I can imagine. I can't imagine this being anything but really, really loud.
Were they good?
I mean, I guess it depends on the feel.
Didn't you see them live, Mike?
No, I never saw them.
Yeah, but this one I thought it's just really kind of catchy. It kind of gets some of that like poppiness, but still had that drive and the noise and everything like that. And you know, this one had some kind of like interesting effects where they made some of the vocal sound a little bit like submerged, like it's underwater. So there was kind of this juxtaposition between the kind of like low atmospheric mellow with a burst of, you know, kind of poppy intensity. You might hear my little 3-year-old running around in the background. But
does he ever say "Razor"?
Yeah, and it just kind of had that unpolished slacker sort of aesthetic that was like huge in the 90s, you know, Pavement and other bands like that. And next up, I put a whole bunch of tracks on here. We got Paleto. This was one from Lou Barlow.
Oh yeah, I can hear that.
So those familiar with Sebado will recognize the vocalist there.
Apparently, there was a lot of tension between the two.
Yeah, yeah. They, I guess, like they, there was kind of a lot of tension throughout, and then like pretty shortly after this album was done, they broke up, and he went to form Sebado, which worked out pretty well for him. And but yeah, this track, it was Lou Barlow playing a ukulele. Yeah,
nice.
It was just, yeah, like very, very lo-fi recording. Is it, I don't know, Ryan, when you hear that, is that kind of like your nightmare? That sound quality?
No. Lo-fi in the right circumstances works really well.
Yeah.
And in that case, it wasn't too bad. It did seem out of place with the rest of the album, mm-hmm. but a little bit. But
yeah.
Now that I know that it was a Sebado thing, that's mm-hmm. bitching.
Yeah, but yeah, so that that song is a bit out of place because it doesn't really fit like everything else. And it's almost like just to appease him or something, they let him throw this on at the end. He had another song right before this, but this one was very different. And this song in itself is also just highly contrasting because like the first like minute 40, it's just him playing the ukulele like that. And then it gets like, there's this like chaotic, this like screech. And then it's like this sort of sound collage for the rest of it. What was that?
How was that?
You know, along the lines of, kitch,
oh,
yeah. You know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah, I'm a Foley artist on the side.
Yeah. So you need to listen to the album to actually hear that.
Yeah, I didn't want to, you know, because I was thinking about putting that transition moment in there, but I think that would just blow everybody's ears out because it just hits really hard. And then it's just kind of all over the place. A little bit like, you know, Revolution 9 off the White Album, but like kind of more abrasive, I guess I could say. Yeah. So, you know, that was just kind of the experimental side that was from Lou Barlow. And it's kind of interesting that they definitely split after this. And you can see that there's kind of a division between them just through this one song. But, you know, this kind of sound kind of, it definitely had an influence on like sort of shoegaze stuff. Kevin Shields from My Bloody Valentine, you know, found this album to be very influential. Kurt Cobain, all sorts of people cited this album as being an influence.
Is Nirvana considered shoegaze?
No, they're a grunge, but just, yeah. So I should have clarified.
What is that?
Well, that's like kind of the atmospheric, noisy, like depressive stuff.
Where everyone in the audience is looking down their shoes.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, I guess I'm not that familiar with that genre, but like Slow Dive and like My Bloody Valentine, people can look it up, I don't know. But yeah,
warm bathtub music.
Well, the only thing I really know from Kevin Shields is the stuff he did with Sofia Coppola and the, what was it, Lost in Translation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did a bunch of stuff on that soundtrack. Hmm. It's quite good. But yeah, the last track here, this was actually not part of the original album. This was, that album was released in 1987 and then Just Like Heaven, the cover here was from 1989. It was a standalone single.
I think it's better than Robert's.
Well, I love this because it's got the same energy, right? And it's got that peppiness, but it's got this distortion and like eerie darkness because it's not trying to sound like dark, but that distortion and, you know, I don't know, it just kind of it adds another layer to me to the song.
It feels like if you could release that later, because that was kind of during the same time that song was out, if you mm-hmm. released it later, it would have caught fire, you know, like introducing people to that song.
Oh, right.
Like
yeah, like much, much later. Yeah, and that was actually for Dinosaur Jr., that was like their most popular song up to that point, because it actually got him played on MTV and stuff like that. But yeah, because I think the the having the connection to a really popular song and then having an interesting take on it, you know, helped it take off a little bit. But yeah, the rough around the edges vocals, and you know, it just definitely like kind of like an ironic cover, which started happening in, but it's not ironic because I actually liked it, you know what I mean? But like the sound of it kind of gives that vibe. And you know, you got a lot of covers like that happened throughout the 90s, like in, you know, what was that really awful? Was it Limp Bizkit who did the George Michael or something? It's one of those bands, like, you know what I mean? That's like the worst extreme of that. But like, that was something that was just prevalent in the 90s. And you had like the country version of, what was that? Boys in the Hood, and you know, that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Snoop Dogg stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just, this album really grew on me, and I feel like this is one I can revisit and just have a lot of listens because there's other things I'm going to find and kind of just get past, like, you know, in my old age, like I listen to things. I'm like, what's that noise? You know, even though I've grown up listening to a lot of this stuff, you know, I just haven't been listening to this noisy of music recently. But then the more I listened to it, I was actually able to pull out the tunefulness, which, you know, I really enjoyed. But fun fact, hopefully it's fun. Their original name was, well, not original name, but prior to being Dinosaur Jr., they were Dinosaur.
Okay.
Yeah. But they actually had to change their name because there was a, I'm using air quotes, supergroup in the 80s called the Dinosaurs. And it was made up of Bay Area, psychedelic era band members. Like, we all know Peter Albin from Big Brother and the Holding Company, right? John Cipollina from Quicksilver Messenger Service. Spencer Dryden of Jefferson Airplane.
Sure.
Well, Jefferson Airplane.
No, we know the bands, but do you know these people?
No,
that's what I'm saying. It's like the afterthoughts from all the bands were in it. Except, though, interestingly enough, Robert Hunter, you know, the Grateful Dead lyricist, was in this band.
One of the best lyricists of all time.
And, of course, Barry Melton from Country Joe and the Fish. So.
Okay.
They were all the ones in the Dinosaurs?
They were in the Dinosaurs, and they threatened legal action against Dinosaur Jr. So this album, when it was originally released, was, you know, with the name Dinosaur. And so if you can find an original LP of that, it's a couple hundred bucks, easy. So, wow. Yeah, because they had to recall it, and then they re-released it as Dinosaur Jr. to avoid lawsuits.
I love that they used Jr. as the way to get around
it. Way to get around it. And it's actually a better name.
Yeah.
It's a lot quirkier.
And they have a lot of albums, too. They've been playing for a very long time.
Yeah, right? They've been keeping going. I haven't looked at their whole catalog, to be honest with you. Sorry, that was a failing on my part. But I'll go with you on that, Ryan. We'll call that quantity a lot.
Well, and there's a lot of good music in there, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had that Feel the Pain. That was a kind of MTV hit. I remember that one being played a lot. But, yeah, I think it would be worth taking a deep dive into their catalog because this one definitely... you know, piqued my interest.
I agree with that.
That was for a Sting cover, right?
What was one?
Feel the Pain.
Feel the Pain.
Oh, no.
It was the Field series.
I think it was, yeah.
Feel the Gold, Feel the Pain.
Oh, no, it wasn't Field of Pain. It was Feel.
Feel.
Yeah, Feel the Pain.
Oh,
yeah.
That's different. Okay.
Yeah, Field of Pain. That was a classic by Sting. Wasn't it by the...
That was a Police song, right?
Oh, right, Sting.
Feel the Pain.
Yep.
This has gone south. What was your rating?
Well, my rating for this one, we'll let Mike sing it out. But
Feel the Pain.
No one needs that.
Yeah, ratings, go.
All right. I'm going to give it a solid 4 for me on this one.
Wow.
Yeah, let's go with Jake. I have a feeling. I'm curious to see what he's going to say.
Yeah, what? I'm curious what your feeling is.
My feeling is that it's not going to be a 4 from you.
You're correct. I gave this one a 3, but I did like it. I really liked this one. I knew the songs from the 90s, the one, and I can't remember the name, but the one where that the cork is coming out. Yep, whatever that one's called. I knew that one.
I feel the pain, actually.
But it's pretty cool. I like this album a lot. I love Just Like Heaven. I thought that was a really great way to end this album.
Real quick too. The ending of that song, I think it's hilarious because it's just like really loud and it just cuts off.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I was like, what?
And I was like, that's it. It's over. Yeah. I actually went back. I was like, something happened.
Yeah, exactly. I did the same thing.
But I also love the cover art. Like the cover art to me was really cool. It had that like overlay, literally having like that pencil drawing of one person laying almost, you know, back to back on top of the other person, like. You're literally living all over me. I thought it was pretty cool. So
nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, surprise. That's yeah. Oh. Encouraging. Mike, what did you think? Yeah, there you go.
Feel the pain. That's the one.
Feel the pain. That's what it's called. I gave it a 3. It's my default rating. Unless it swings me one way or the other.
Did you listen
to
it? I
give it a 3. Of course I listened to it. But yeah, like I can appreciate J Mascis's vocal style, but much like Paul Simon's, there's only so much of it I can take. So a 3.
Nice. Huh. And Ryan?
I gave it a 3 as well. It was a little crunchy around the corners, but I did appreciate, like you said, and I am going to listen to it again because there is something that I got out of what you explained on everything, and I want to listen to some Sebado albums too.
Start with Bake Sale.
Well, I'm very familiar with Bake Sale and the other Harmacy.
Bubble and Scrape and Smash Your Head on the Punk Rock are probably more accessible, and then you can go back to like 703 and their first couple albums, because those are harder to listen to be honest with you.
Between you and Chuck, that was always kind of playing in a certain era of time, and I had it on tapes and stuff too, so it, like, and I want to listen to a lot more of Dinosaur Jr.'s catalog because they got kind of cleaner around the corners after this album too, it mm-hmm. seems.
But he's still going through puberty, if you're gonna.
And you know, I don't get as wound up about the vocal stuff like you guys. It always seems like everyone's got a hard on with someone's fucking vocals.
I think Mike and I are very sensitive, like oppositely sensitive to vocals.
Yeah, no doubt.
You have to try really hard to constantly sing like that. I don't think that just comes naturally.
I think he's just singing. I think that's what he's doing, and it's just like all you're doing is making fun of his face. You know, it's his vocal cords. It's like,
what
you know,
can you do about it? It's like, you know, this is how I talk, and this is how I sing.
That's why we don't sing. Right.
Anyway, last but not least, we have the cock.
You have the cock.
Cocktail
Twins.
Taking
a different direction.
And it definitely was a pause in the wrong place there.
That's because I don't know how to say it. It's cocktoe. It's French.
I think that's the purpose of the name, is that you don't know how
cock.
To say it. Yeah, right. Well, yeah. Or emphasize the cock.
I mean, maybe. But what do you guys know about this? This is one we're supposed to tackle as a group. I don't even know if we picked clips for it.
We
just
didn't.
Play some random clip.
Oh, right.
Clip
yeah, no clips.
Heaven,
like,
or
Heaven
Las
or
Vegas.
Las Vegas, yeah.
Yeah.
I like all the titles. The 50-50 clown.
Ice blink look.
Yeah. Pitch the baby. let's listen to Pitch the Baby.
Yeah,
what's this got for us? Oh yeah. There you go. And very Moogie.
It reminds me of The Cure a lot.
Yeah.
Good bass.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know. Yeah, so far, so good.
Wolf in the Breast is also a good one.
So this is apparently a defining dream pop album.
Oh,
dream pop.
Dream pop. Yeah, I could see that.
That's a good example of the dream pop.
Well, we haven't heard any of their singing. That's where I have a problem with it.
Oh, well, then we just don't have any singing. Let's go to 50-50 Clown.
We'll just pretend they don't sing.
Yeah, right. Just edit out.
We'll edit it out. I know people that do this.
That's not bad.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it's not bad.
Let's go to Pitch the Baby.
15-second doses.
Okay, I can see.
No, we can't. It doesn't do anything different, you know? I mean, it's pretty much all sounds just like that, in my opinion.
Has there ever been a time that you've been in Vegas and you've thought, man, am I in heaven or am I in Vegas?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the
right.
Strip club.
Man.
No.
Well, am I in hell or Vegas? Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends. And if, you know, the day after you were in heaven, then yeah, you might be tired of Vegas.
What's your rating, Jordan?
Oh, my rating for this one? I enjoyed it. It's just kind of nice background music. 3.
I also gave it 3.
Yeah, I also gave it 3.
I also gave it 3. How does that work? That's our baseline, because I don't think it's bad.
No, I agree. It's very pleasant.
No, yeah. It's like heaven.
I just don't think it's good.
I can turn it on without a problem, listen to it, but yeah.
I sometimes get stuck on the influence. Like, how was this band, to be able to make this list, was this influential enough for the rest of the music industry? Yes. After this album was released,
apparently Bjork found them influential. Beach House,
I see a lot of Beach House influence and a lot of those type of bands that my old lady's into. You know, that's immediately until the vocals came in, I was like, oh, this would be something Genevieve would like. And then I heard the vocals and said,
it's 1990, so
yeah.
Yeah,
and it was kind of like the apex of its genre too. So sometimes that's like one of the main reasons it might be on the list too.
But you can see where they were cutting edge on some of the technical stuff and everything. It sounds really cool. It's very swirly and stuff.
Jordan, do you have a final breakdown of all of our?
Yes, folks? I do. In fact, so let's go from last to first.
Please.
So bringing up the rear, we got Heaven 17. Was it House and Pavement with 2.5 stars
because of the one.
One kind of dragged that one down, and you know, it was could have been a 3 otherwise. That's but true. Jake, anyway, going on to Armed Forces. Let me see. Oh, I think I did the math wrong. Give me one moment, folks. I absolutely did the math wrong.
It's just par for the course.
Like, I don't, because I'm looking at my score, and God, that is absolutely like wrong.
Cursed. Yeah, this is where. Yeah, you're supposed
just
to be
bear
worshiping.
With me, folks.
Do you need a calculator?
I actually have one.
No.
It's called
you're supposed to be worshiping on Sunday, not.
That's right. This
whatever
is
you guys are pretending to do.
Ah, there we go. Now that sounds more like it.
26.
26 this out of 5.
58 stars.
it's the divided button, not the multiplication button.
Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to start over with Heaven 17 at 2.5 stars. Next, we have Heaven or Las Vegas, 3 stars. And then right after that, we got at 3, we've got You're Living All Over Me by Dinosaur Jr. with 3.25. And just edging it out, we have Armed Forces coming in at 2 with 3.375 stars. And of course, that leaves us with Graceland as our 1 album. With 4.125 stars.
Love it.
Amazing.
Love it.
Good week.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
except for the production.
Hopefully next week things will be a little bit more smooth, a little bit better. But until then, this has been 1001, an album odyssey. Have a great week.